This is Tim Dougherty. The intro song for this track is Odyssey's 2015 Belong to the World, a song that on the surface is about breaking free of boxes, but also about ways of finding deeper belonging and connection as an immigrant. I plan to use this song in Odyssey's album, The Good Fight, in my upcoming classes, in part to open up conversations around immigration. I begin to lie, begin to party where I feel strange. Never was the cool dude, never was the suave guy. More like the eye guy, one of women to root to. Never wanted to be the type that they were used to. Now I'm flying somewhere. In this track, we draw on David Green's work that reimagines classroom practice as a cipher. We start by making distinctions between the cipher as a generative practice of accountable response to classmates as fellow makers, and the typical writing prompts we ask for, like the academic essay, as schooled responses that often position students as detached armchair critics, less accountable to the readings and less accountable to each other as makers. Too much change, too extreme. So we accord in the middle, forever lost in the process, too between. Somebody asked, what do you claim? I belong to the world. But the other thing I want to ask is, what type of genres are we asking students to respond in? Because schooled responses, and this is why I'm so tired of this, schooled responses are made to say, I need to find a thing to critique about it, right? Like, I wonder about, a cipher where it's like, the audience is our class, and the most powerful response wins, right? And gets to choose the next type of response we're going to do, right? So that it's not about who can better critique some stupid thing about it to show that they did the school thing. But it's about, being together and making something.
So back to these creative process, these creative practices, and back to, Michael, the sort of theories of possibility that come off of African rhetoric. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That move too. Then it facilitates the cipher, right? It doesn't let you off the hook in terms of where your criteria comes from. So if the criteria is generative, then we're already positioned as informed listeners and not passive, right? But the listening becomes an active, or the reception, or the through becoming an interlocutor at that particular point. So there's an exchange that's taken place, and the text only means because of the way we decided we're going to listen to it.
Right.
So then that rules out the passive consumption or the commodification of the text, regardless of what it's offering. So it's almost, that's interesting. So you just flip the script on that then. So it didn't even have to do necessarily with what particular text we present. It has to do with what type of ways we're encouraging students to read the text. Right. That's really more important.
And how does school position us as armchair critics that aren't actually engaging, that we're just passively writing it off or writing, but if we position it as a cipher that you have to generate something,
right,
what comes next?
Right.
That seems like, if we approach it as makers rather than critics, that's
right,
a whole different bowl of wax.
That's right.
I mean, I guess I want to challenge, because songwriting, right, responding to this call is about engaging in a practice, the reason I brought it up is because, again, turning to practices, I'm all for that, absolutely, let's have different practices in the classroom, and yet we all sort of had a little moment of thinking about sound writing as a practice and thinking, but wait, because practices can still sort of take on the dominant logic and the dominant, particularly because of the structure we're working under, right? Because we're working in the academy, and it's I guess to Carmen Kennard's point, we either have to foreground a different history to the academy before engaging in certain practices, and then to Adam Banks's point, not allowing these practices to become the next capitalist commodity, the next capital hotness, the next, the next thing that you can abstract and reduce, and reproduce, right? And the one thing that I could think of that sort of resists that is having those really uncomfortable conversations that put us in, that have us all kind of in the messy, funky of it, right? Because we can't settle so easily
Yanira asked Tim to explain more about the cipher in the classroom, especially as a replacement for the writer's workshop.
So, for instance, like, to Michael's point, this idea that when we talk about who's going to win the cipher, we have these framing conversations about, okay, so if we all agree that this is about getting free, what do we agree, like, do so? And we just read some Black feminist work about framing the fact that until Black women are free, until indigenous folks are free, right, nobody's free, right? And so if we agree that that's a value of our cipher, right, that the response should be generative to move towards freedom, like, do we all agree that? Okay, we all agree that. Do we then agree to this, right, that until those currently furthest from freedom are free, then none of us are free? Can we go there, right? Like, this sense of, like, it's like y'all were talking with Ira Shore about this, that it's about testing the limits of how free people want to get, right, and making that decision together. But to your point, Yanira, and your question, I've found the only time that I've used the cipher with depth was in an elective at Syracuse in a style class. And I made the whole thing about cipher with style play. And it was fabulous. The best class I ever taught by far. And it's hard for me to disambiguate whether that's because they were all writers that were psyched about it and committed. Right, because when I tried to drop a cipher on the class this semester with the Kendrick Lamar stuff, folks were just like, nah, not going to happen. And part of it, I think, was because I was trying to cipher in this limited way of, like, let's cipher our summaries. Whereas in the style class, it was always about the power of what's your response, what's your generation, what's your contribution to, okay, we're all working on repetition, anaphora, whatever. Who did the best anaphora, right? And, like, that sense of, like, that playful little, it was competitive, but it was playful and it was joyous. And it took us to really interesting political conversations about the politics of language and why folks win or why folks want to share certain things or don't want to share certain things. But it was the first time that I had people having those conversations about each other's writing instead of about the text we were reading. Yeah. And there was an investment there that was different. It was just fundamentally different. And it's like this elusive mountaintop moment for me that I'm like, how do I capture that in a first year writing class? And it might not be possible to the extent that it was in the majors elective class. But I think part of it could be that if we flip the script on what writing is right out the gate and say, like, look, you need to respond in a way that's trying to get us more free in response to Kendrick Lamar or Odyssey or Rhapsody or Jesse Williams' speech or whatever, right? The Black Lives Matter platform website, right? Your response has to, the goal is to, we come back to the cipher, who can help us get more free, right? And it doesn't matter what your response looks like, and then we decide. Like, I'm interested to see what that would do.
That sounds great. It seems to challenge, like, feels anti-capitalist in a way, like, in a really interesting way, in that, like, it's affirming, not affirming of the product, but of, like, the potential to create. Affirming of the thing you read, but the potential to, like, it's the self-affirming aspect of it. So it's not this other thing. It's not this competition for this, you know, and this other thing out there, but, like, self-affirmation feels important in that practice. So that's really interesting. I totally would like to try that in the classroom. I mean, and conversations about sort of audience, about that's come up for me. How do you best reach these audiences? How do you best I think that could be really wonderful too, in getting at, like, the genius, the absolute genius of these texts, like, of these, like, hip hop texts or soundwriting text.
Because it's like, I'm responding to this, and I don't want it. So some students will be safe and play a summary. And then, like, I've had MCs in every one of my classes at Westchester, and some are going to try. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to try to put a verse down, mm-hmm. you know? And then it's like, then students are watching their peer try to do what Kendrick did or Rhapsody does and being like, whoa, that's hard, right? Because I see you as somebody that's pretty good and like, whoa, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and it does this thing of like the hierarchies of skills when it comes to like the writing then shift quite a bit. So that's pretty interesting.
That's the other thing. And that's the thing that struck me when I first heard David Green talk about this, like the writing workshop as a cipher, because like, so the cipher has always been about building chops. Right, it's always the playful competition to build your chops for the album or for the mixtape or, you know. But the cipher is like a lived, embodied, we're all in the circle pushing each other. Right. Because we all care about each other building our craft, right? And that's the spirit I want to capture in a writing class. Like, I can't think of a better way to frame what I want to happen in a writing class. And so often my students, like, the audience problem of the writing class is because it's so fake. And I've been trying to, like, think, like, innovate these, like, convoluted ways for them to imagine audiences that they can care about. And, like, it's just hit me that, like, what David is talking about with the cipher is that, like, you make the workshop so intensely community norm about what's generative and what's powerful that, like, the audience is there now. Mm-hmm. Right. But the only way to do that is if everybody feels like they get to make the shit they want to make and try to make it better.
Right. So, Michael, how does this, like, you know, you've mentioned, like, you know, this idea of, like, working with these elements in a predominantly white classroom, right? Like, you know, I think at some point you mentioned, yeah, well, like, we're in a structure that they love Black Genius, but not the bodies aren't there, you know, like, so that you end up with things like the mixtape and the, you know, so how do we conceive of using these practices but like, avoiding that kind of outcome, I guess?
Yeah, that's a good problem. I don't know, you know? I'm trying to picture myself pulling this off, Tim.
Well, I think we all have to do it together, and that's a lesson.
And wondering, you know, wondering what it looks like, you know? Uh-huh.